Yeah, I'm gonna give my hot take at this point. I would draft Hanley Ramirez over Freddie Freeman this year.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy staff. Brett, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much better are you feeling after two glasses of wine and a box of animal crackers?
It wasn't a whole box. It was a half a bag, man. Come on.
You didn't give me a number.
I feel good, though. I'd say maybe 6.5. Going like, on 7.5.
Cracker Gazi, if you will.
That's true. If I were in eligibility, I'd be outfield eligibility.
So you'd be Chris Davis. You're the Chris Davis of this podcast.
Yep.
Mike, if you could rank Chris Davis in any position, what position would that be?
Oddly enough, relief pitcher.
I like it. Let's go with that. All right.
He does have a career appearance there.
He does. Like Jonathan Mouton or whatever. What was his
name?
James
Mouton.
James Mouton. Be ref that one. While you're listening to this. All right. So we're gonna talk first base tonight. It's a really fun position. We have up on the site right now our tiered rankings, the stated position, along with 19 other articles, including Welcome to Splitsville, The Adjuster, ADP analysis, Tale of the Tapes, multiples of those. It's a lot going on at Baseball Prospectus. So you can read all of that. Subscribe today. You can read all of us there at baseballperspectives.com. Follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. If you leave us a review, I will compliment you for that. So take a screenshot, post it on Twitter, and we will say thank you. And so there's that. So let's talk first base. Mike, first of all, I want to talk a little bit of a primer about position eligibility, because I know this is something that came up in the course of how we construct these lists every year, and then our commenters usually have questions about it. So there is some element of that at first base with guys like Ian Desmond potentially gaining that eligibility, but can you give us a brief primer on how you put together the tiered rankings and how we determine position eligibility?
Well, I mean I can read right from the article, but essentially what we do is we use what is the standard, you know, old school rotisserie rules, but they're also fairly consistent across CBS, ESPN, and the Yahoo platforms, particularly for major league eligibility, which is a 20-game minimum requirement. And if there's multiple position eligibility, we go by where we expect a player to be commonly used. And again, this is fairly standard, and you know it goes in the order of, you know, catcher. You know, if you have someone like Buster Posey, who's a catcher first baseman, it's very unlikely you're going to use him at first base. Shortstop, second base, third base, outfield, first base, and designated hitter. We rank designated hitters with first baseman because in a year like this year, when you only have two significant DHs, it doesn't really make sense to, you know, have an article for the two of them. We did joke about that. We decided not to do it. And the other thing we do, which, you know, some leagues do a little bit differently, if a player played under 20 games at any position in the majors, we rank him at the position he played most frequently. You know, that's the one piece we debated a little bit more with Blake Swihart, for example. I know that he's not much of a fantasy commodity in redraft leagues. We talked about ranking him at catcher because he was catcher outfield when you combined his majors and minors, but we didn't do that. But if you go back and look, it really doesn't have much of an impact. There's just a very small handful of players that this would touch.
All right, so we're going to start off talking tier by tier. So if you're listening to this and you're near your computer, you can follow along with Mike Gianella's tiered rankings, which are up at Baseball Prospectus right now. So we're going to start off with the five-star tier. And that one is populated by four players. You have Paul Goldschmidt, Joey Votto, Miguel Cabrera, and Anthony Rizzo, all of whom are going in the first or second round of drafts in NFBC ADPs right now. So, Brett, I guess I'll start with Paul Goldschmidt here because he's coming off a really interesting season in which the power regressed a little bit. He only hit 24 home runs. But he was one of 14 players with 30-plus steals, had a career-high 32. What are you expecting from Goldschmidt in 2017? Because it seems like the stolen bases, it's maybe unrealistic to expect 32 again, but he's pretty much a five-category anchor and one of the safest investments in fantasy baseball right now.
I completely agree with that. He is a strong contributor across every category, and he is... you know, barring injury, he is one of the safest performance first rounders, obviously outside of Mike Trout. But, you know, the tick up in steals is great. I think, you know, given where he was at, I think 32 is probably his high watermark. I think we're probably looking at realistically 20-ish next year, which is, you know, in our environment of stolen bases. And, you know, George, you wrote about this earlier in the offseason. 20 stolen bases is really important and more important than we're used to it being just, you know, even 3-4 years ago. He's extraordinarily safe in batting average. The one thing that is a little bit of a splinter in his value, though, is that you talked about the power. It's not that he got unlucky last year. He just decided to hit a lot more ground balls, and while that's not a terrible thing because he does offer the stolen base value, you know, if he doesn't hit 30 home runs, then it makes it tough to justify taking him in the top five overall. Even with the stolen bases, given the first base eligibility, but yeah, I mean he's still extremely safe. He's still extremely great, and he's the clear number one first baseman for me.
Yeah, just to put some actual numbers on what you're talking about with the increased ground ball percentage. He had a 35% fly ball rate his first 6 years in the majors. That dropped to 29% last year. And of that 29%, he had something like a 14% infield fly ball rate. So that's going to hurt your power output, even in a place like Chase Field. So, Mike, are you expecting a little bit more of a bounce back in power from Goldschmidt to maybe offset a backslide in steals this year? What are your expectations for Goldschmidt?
Yeah, I'm probably more, well, we're talking about a player we all love, but I'm a little more excited about Goldie than Brett is. I have him ranked third overall behind Trout and Altuve, and some of that, which is ahead of where his ADP is. I see Chris Bryant's ahead of him. I see Nolan Arenado's ahead of him. And some of that is, you know, if you look at 20 to 25 steals, as Brett said, that's still a good number. But I see a slight bounce back in power. He's just one of those players who's he's too good to expect him to slip too far. And then there's the average. The batting average with Goldie is also a fairly reliable commodity. You know, is he necessarily going to be a superstar in the category? No, but it's just one more place you can rely on him to do good for your team. So you're looking at somebody who, you know, he's just great across the board. And no matter where those contributions come from, you're going to get a five category player.
All right. Let's talk about Joey Votto next. And I'll stick with you, Mike, because Votto is right now he's going 28th overall in ADP, which makes him the sixth first baseman off the board, which is like in the late second round. And I don't understand why he's not going higher right now. He's coming off just a monster second half. He hit close to 400, finished at like 326, 29 home runs, 8 steals, 100 runs in RBI. He's really good. What are maybe some of the concerns with Votto? Is this just a byproduct of the supporting cast not really being great in Cincinnati and people worried about the counting stats, or what do you attribute that to so far?
Well, that's some of it, and I did mention that in the article, and you know, he was my value pick, and I made some of those points you made. So for me, playing devil's advocate with Votto, it's the supporting cast. It's also, for a superstar, it's not that he's ever been bad, but he's had some years where the power's been down a little bit, or he's missed some time, and he has missed a lot of time. He's missed some time due to minor injuries. He's not as young as you think if you look at his age. So there's probably some of that. All that combined, when you look at Votto, if you're going to knock him down, you might look at him and think, well, you know, he's really good, but I'm not necessarily sold on him. But what I think the big thing is with Votto, it is a devaluation of batting average. People don't trust batting average. They look at the category and think, well, you know, someone hit 326 last year. He could easily hit 290. But with Votto's skills, there's some players where I would agree with that and say, yeah, you know, you can't trust a batting average that high. But with Votto's skills and hit tool, 310 is kind of the floor for me, and I'm willing to pay that premium for the average, you know, along with the rest of the package, of course.
Yeah, Brett, just taking a step back and looking at sort of the broader league-wide trends, I mean, I did the the category breakdown series this year, and looking at batting average, you know, there are only 25 hitters who posted a 300 average or higher with a minimum of 500 plate appearances last year, and there were 15 who hit between 290 and 300. So it's about 40 hitters who are in that, you know, 290 to 300 range, and of that group, six were first basemen, and Votto's one of those guys. And I just think you look at these five category anchors and the value they provide in batting average, I think really helps buoy the rest of your team. Is that the right way to look at these five-star tier guys, that they can really help set the table for you in a number of categories as you build your roster?
Yeah, but you also don't want to get too hung up on the batting average utility with Votto, and part of that is because he just walks so damn much. I mean, he played every game last year and he only had 556 at bats. You know, part of that is because the Reds lineup isn't fantastic and it's not turning over, although I think that's a little the counting stat argument, I think, is a little overplayed with Votto. I mean, the Reds last year scored 716 runs as a team. The Houston Astros scored 724 runs as a team. I don't hear people complaining about hitters in the Astros saying that that's just not a great lineup to be in for counting stat purposes. So I think, you know, Votto is definitely elite in batting average on its own, but, you know, if he were the kind of guy who walked only, you know, 50 to 60 times a year, then that batting average becomes more valuable than it does if he's walking, you know, 100 to 120 times a year. So, you know, you have a guy like Miguel Cabrera who hit 316, but had, you know, 40 more at bats. And, you know, that I'd have to actually do that math, and you know, I have to prepare for the podcast if I was going to do that. But if I were to do the actual math, I could tell you exactly what the difference is between what.
Well, it's in our valuation. It's in my valuation spreadsheet, though, and I can tell you that right. Votto did earn more than you're right. It closes the gap, but Votto did earn more than Cabrera in batting average by about like a. It looks like about 60 cents. So even though the average was higher, you are correct that those at bats, you know, did move the needle for him. A better example is Mookie Betts, who had over 100 more at bats and was more valuable in batting average, even though his batting average was lower.
Yep. You know, all that said, I think Votto, I totally agree with Mike. I think the value with Votto where he's going right now, I think is great. I think some of that is going to go away by the time we get to March. You know, Votto is the kind of guy who tends to trickle upwards as people start, you know, losing a little faith in some of their higher upside first and second rounders. So I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, if he's going in the late second now, if he starts going towards, you know, at least the middle of the second round by the time most drafts start picking up. But, you know, he's close to as safe as you can get. I mean, this whole top tier is incredibly safe, and it's a nice group to choose from.
So to close out the five-star tier, Mike, who would you rather have, Anthony Rizzo or Miguel Cabrera? Because right now, Rizzo is actually going ahead. I know we're talking about January ADPs, but I think it is a little indicative of public consensus that Rizzo, being younger and coming off, I don't know if you could call it a World Series bump, but he is going ahead of Cabrera in the late first round right now. So who would you rather have if you just had that choice in front of you in the late first?
I lean Cabrera, but really I have them so close it's almost a coin flip. I probably lean Cabrera for the track record, and I don't think the steals from Rizzo that he stole in 2015 are coming back. So yeah, that's my pick. But really, if I flipped a coin, I got Rizzo, I wouldn't be disappointed. Yeah,
Cabrera had a nice bounce back though. 38 home runs last year, really nice.
He's a future Hall of Famer. Whereas Rizzo, we don't know that yet.
Right, exactly. Brett, the four-star tier. This is where I think we have our first disagreement, you and I, of the offseason. We don't disagree often, but I think we do on this specific player, and that's Freddie Freeman. So I'm gonna let you make the case why you don't like Freeman in terms of the relative value right now, and then I'll present the counter argument, I guess.
So it's not that I don't like Freeman. I just don't like Freeman at where his current and probably projected draft slot is. Where is he going overall now?
26
is he going like 20
overall?
26
second round.
Okay, so to take a first baseman that early, you want one of three things. You want either a guy who you are pretty confident is going to hit over 300. You want a guy who you're pretty confident is going to hit at least 30 home runs, or a guy you're pretty confident is going to contribute much more than a normal first baseman in stolen bases. Freeman is none of those things. Freeman did hit 302 last year with 34 home runs, but there are plenty of reasons why I don't think he's going to do that again. The batting average, Freeman's a naturally high BABIP guy. He hits a ton of line drives. So, he's sort of one of your perfect examples, him and Goldschmidt actually. Your perfect examples of why you don't just regress people back to a league average BABIP. But that said, it was 370 last year. His career BABIP is 340. There's not a great reason to expect him to hit more than 280 this year, or really any year going forward, especially with the highest strikeout rate of his career in 2016. The other side of that is the 34 home runs were driven by one positive factor and one factor that doesn't really matter. So he increased his fly ball rate. He was hovering about 35% or so throughout most of his career. He ticked that up to 40% last year, and that's great. That's something that could be a real change. It could be sustainable. But he paired the fly ball increase with a 20% home run fly ball rate, which is noticeably higher than any other year of his career. Now, the one caveat I'll put in this is that nobody quite knows how the new Braves stadium is going to play. It's possible that it plays a lot more friendly to power hitters than the old stadium did. But, again, that's betting on the unknown. So, I'm comfortable with Freeman as a guy who can hit. He's a pretty safe bet to hit 280 with 25 home runs. But given that he's not going to steal any bases, and given that, if you want to talk about knocking someone for the lineup they reside in, Atlanta's not a bad lineup to knock someone for being in. I mean, they scored. You talk about Cincinnati and being worried about Votto and how they scored 716 runs. The Braves scored 649 runs, and while they project to be a little bit better this year, they'll still be a below average offense. So Freddie Freeman, love him as a fourth round pick. hate him as a second round pick.
That was perfect. I don't know how you could beat that summary. That was incredible. So I agree with 99% of that. The one thing I will say, I agree with that. I really hate the ADP right now in the second round, but I do think there is reason to be a little more optimistic about SunTrust Park, the new park he's moving into. It's only 325 down the line, which is about 5 feet shorter right down the line to the foul pole than it was in Turner Field. And it's only 375 in the right field gap, which is about 20 feet shorter in distance-wise than it was in Turner Field. So I think there is a case to be made if Freeman's going to pull the ball more and put the ball in the air more like he did last year. I think maybe the power is a little bit more sustainable than I think some people anticipate. So, yeah, I'm on board with Freeman. I think he's squarely a four-star guy. I just wonder where the ADP is ultimately going to end up. Mike, how aggressive would you be right now in pushing Freeman from an auction value standpoint?
I have Freeman in the high 20s. So, you know, this kind of ties back to what Brett's talking about, which is 30 to me in an only league is, you know, this is true in a mix too, but that's the elite level. That's where you're, you know, if you're paying that $30 price, the guy's your anchor, one of your anchors. So I'm right below that with Freeman, and it's where I agree with Brett. I believe in him. I probably see him in a draft as more of a third rounder than a fourth rounder. But yes, if you're pushing Freeman to that middle to end of the second round, a 15 team, you're buying into almost the exact same year he had last year. And given the lineup, given some of the other things on that team, it's a little bit aggressive. I like Freeman. It's more the valuation, and Brett put it so well that I'm not going to, you know, rehash what he said.
That was really good. All right, we haven't had a chance to talk about Edwin Encarnacion yet because he signed right after the new year, and we talked about catchers last week, so we didn't want to jumble that in. But, Mike, I'll go back to you for Edwin. He's hit 193 home runs in the last 5 years, which is the second most in the majors. The American League Central is not outstanding from a pitching standpoint right now. How confident are you in Encarnacion continuing, I guess maybe just picking up where he left off in Toronto the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, he's a pretty safe bet to, you know, he hit over 40 home runs last year. That's always a hard number to assume again. You know, but 35, that seems like a fairly safe assumption. A lot of runs bet in that lineup, a lot of runs. The batting average is where he's not in that five-star tier. He's not going to hit more than 270. But as far as reliability and safety at this point, I have no problems at all, you know, picking him a couple rounds after, you know, the elite guys, or in an only league, bidding him up into the mid or even upper 20s.
Brett, we're going to talk. We've talked a lot about Hanley Ramirez in the past on this show. This is one of, I think, you and Mike, one of your better calls a year ago, that the ADP was just way too low and that Ramirez was going to be good. So what are your expectations now with him moving to DH for 2017? Because I just think having him off the field entirely only ensures that he gets the at-bats to really do what he did again last year. So I think the health was really the only concern we've had in the last couple of years with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna give my hot take at this point. I would draft Hanley Ramirez over Freddie Freeman this year.
It's bold, but man, is it? Why do you say that though? What factor is it?
It's the combination of his on the field skills and the soft factors. I mean, there was all that talk after 2015 about, you know, how he was going to be a guy that kind of guy that couldn't play in Boston. There's all that crap, and you know, there that always exists because you always have your Carl Crawfords and your Pablo Sandovals. But you know, it was always overblown because of the injury stuff. You know, Hanley is always going to be an injury risk. He is less of an injury risk when he is not running around on the grass or running around on the dirt. You know, anecdote. This is purely anecdotal at this point, but it, you know, his recent injuries have been sustained mostly in the field, I believe. I know
2014.
Yeah, I know the one big injury at the beginning of 2014 was when he like dove awkwardly on the infield and hurt his shoulder, and then
he ran into the wall and left.
Maybe I'm thinking of 2013.
Wait, 2013 was his WBC injury, and I believe that was an off-field injury as well.
Yeah. So you get Hanley for 140 games, which, I mean, he played 147 last year. I think he is a good bet to show with the power and the average again, and he is going to have a shitload of RBI opportunities in that lineup.
A shipload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel pretty bullish on him. I know we were pretty bullish on Hanley last year, but I feel my confidence in him has been even further renewed, and I'm ready to throw down.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, over the last 3 years, the 3 years before last year, you know, going backwards, 105 games, 128 games, 86 games. So, you know, and of course, 2012 played 157, but you know, I'm intrigued to see if he gets those 140 games. You know, 130 might be more realistic for me. So I would agree, if he can play those 140, 150 games, he could shoot to the top of this four-star tier. When I put this together, I kind of built in that injury risk and assuming he wouldn't get there.
I think we're all in agreement that he's the best value in this four-star tier when you consider the on-field production and then where he's currently going in drafts. He's currently going in the sixth round, 85th overall in NFBC drafts, and that's 10th at first base. So I think if you're going to go after one guy, you can actually wait a little bit and still get that elite slugger you want in Hanley. So plus, he stole 9 bases last year, which matters more than you think. I know it's not it definitely
does matter more than you think. I mean, he's averaged 10 steals a year over the last 4 seasons, and that's even with time missed due to injury.
He does seem like the kind of guy, though, that if he stole like 1 or 2 this year, like, nobody would be surprised. We'd all be like, all right, he's a 33-year-old DH. He's not running anymore.
There's always the motivation factor with Hanley, where you just kind of wonder what it's going to be. You're not going to know.
Well, you can even see the team saying to him, yeah, like, we don't want you to get hurt at all. Like, so don't, you know, unless it's like John Lester in an interleague game, don't run.
They need him this year because they don't have Ortiz. So someone has to be in the middle of that lineup. So, all right. Brett Will Myers, speaking of speed, Myers last year, he'd never stolen more than 12 bases in a single season in his entire career at any level, even the minor leagues. He stayed healthy last year after the move to first base, hit .259, 28 home runs, 28 steals, one of 4 hitters in the last 5 years to do that. I mean, what do you expect from Myers in 2017? I guess you'd have to start with expectations for stolen bases, right? Where would you put him this year?
There was no great reason why he should have run that much in 2016. And given that the Padres are going to be just as terrible in 2017, I really don't see much reason why, if he doesn't want to, why he won't just start taking off all the time. I'm a little less confident about Myers staying healthy than about Hanley, but the same concept applies where, you know, when you put someone at first base or in Hanley's case at DH, players who are injury prone become less injury prone because they have fewer opportunities to hurt themselves. You know, with Myers, I think the power is pretty legit. I think he's got, you know, about a 23 to 25 homer floor. You know, San Diego is a deceptively good place for right-handed power now, which it's been gradually trending there over the life of the stadium. The steals, I think, you know, I would not be surprised if he stole 25 plus bases again, but Realistically, I think if you're banking on more than 15, I think you're probably going to be a little too aggressive on Myers.
Mike, did you have any thoughts on Myers? Or,
I mean, nothing all that much different. I might like Myers a little bit more than Brett, but I'm in the same camp. You know, just to explain to our readers who also listen to the podcast, you know, he's a four-star guy because 15, maybe 17 steals, like, you know, as you've been pointing out, George, that's worth something in this context.
I certainly didn't mean to downplay that. I mean, I have a feeling I'll end up.
Oh, and I didn't think you were.
I have a feeling I'll end up with Myers in a couple of places because I think there's both fear of blanket regression and fear of injury, and I'm not really that concerned about either. You know, he's the kind of Myers is going to be the poster boy for blanket regression this year, which essentially means, you know, this guy did X last year. He's not going to do X again without any follow up. That's blanket regression.
I will say where I see him going right now, he's averaging 55 in ADP. That's a little high for me. So if that holds, you know, I know early ADP, you know, caveats, all that. But if that holds, I probably won't have him in too many places. Myers feels like that guy. There'll be one owner. Like, I agree with you, Brett. I like him more than a lot of people who think he'll regress or fall off the map. But I feel like there'll be that one or two guys in every league that loves him and believes in him. And as a result, that won't be me.
Yeah, he's going in the fourth round right now in ADP. And I was watching a Julio Urias start earlier today. I've gone back and I'm just watching random games, and it was against the Padres. And Myers is trying to steal on him. And at the time, he'd already picked off six guys in about 2 months. And you just, I think you just have to actually watch the way Myers acted on the base pass. He just looks confident. He was trying to go at every opportunity. And I don't buy this. Well, he's just going to, like Brett was talking about, blanket regression. I just don't think that's going to happen. He's out there trying to steal bases. He's healthy, and that's what you want. So the final guy in the four-star tier is Jose Abreu, and we actually got a Twitter question about him. It's from @JaredFluth, and he wants to know, is the best of Jose Abreu ahead or behind him? Which I think is an interesting question long term, but framed around 2017, I'll start with you, Brett. What are you expecting out of Jose Abreu?
I feel kind of bullish about Abreu. You know, I think he's going to get a little bit of the Votto rub where the White Sox are not going to have a very good team. He's got less offensive support around him, but again, they play in an extreme hitter's park, and that stuff really just isn't going to matter very much. He was not great in the first half, and he was, you know, super Jose Abreu in the second half, meaning he was the 300 plus 30 homer guy in the second half. Once his home run rate started ticking up a little bit, I think, you know, I like his safety and batting average better than his safety and power. I think he's more likely to, hit 300 than to hit 30 home runs. But I don't really view Abreu really any differently than Freddie Freeman. I think, you know, it's that same type of first base profile, a guy who, you know, has a chance to hit 300, has a chance to hit 30 home runs, and really isn't a lock to do either. But a guy who's going to give you a nice floor, I think, he's not going to be the reason why you lose a league.
All right, there's only four players in the three-star tier: Carlos Santana, Victor Martinez, Eric Hosmer, and Chris Davis. I'll start with you, Mike, on Carlos Santana, because we got a Twitter question from @ShawneeDoowop. He wants to know if Carlos Santana's 2016 was his ceiling, and I think he means in terms of power because he hit a career-high 34 home runs. What say you about Carlos Santana?
Well, first of all, hi, Sean. I've met you in real life, so I will actually say hello to you. I can tell that story another day, but I like Santana. Santana's one of those players, you know, he is what he is. You know, you know that the batting average is never going to help you in particular. But, you know, outside of that, he's a fairly consistent player. I'm pretty optimistic. The 34 home runs are a little much to expect again. But I'm fairly optimistic based on what he's done in the past. That 25 home runs is realistic. That 85 to 90 runs batted in is something you can expect from him. He's just a solid player to have. And, you know, again, we're talking about first base, which is more robust than catcher, which we discussed last week. But, you know, in a deeper league, if you've got Santana, if you've got him, if you don't want to pay the premium from those other guys, or if you're in a keeper league and a lot of those other guys are gone, I'm perfectly fine sticking Santana in my lineup and just rolling with those stats. And, you know, if he hits 240 this year, I can kind of live with that average.
How much, Brett, how much of his value depends on where he bats in that Indians lineup? Because I think there's a wide range of outcomes here.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the kind of guy who skews more towards the run scored than the RBI category if you put him in the right spot in the lineup. I think if you hit him fifth or sixth in the lineup, he'll, you know, his counting stats will suffer because that's not where his skill set plays best, as opposed to if he hits first or second in the lineup, then, you know, he, with his on base skills, even with the low batting average, I mean, he'll put himself in a good position to score 100 runs with the lineup behind him. So it makes a little bit of a difference. I mean, not really enough to move the needle, but, you know, it's not like that lineup is so strong that he's going to hit seventh or eighth. So a very, very mild, factor.
Yeah, we have a tail of the tape up now at Baseball Prospectus of Victor Martinez versus Carlos Santana by one of our newest colleagues, Alex Chamberlain. You should all check that out. It was pretty good. He picked a pretty surprising winner too. So you're going to want to check that out. And we'll talk about Martinez because I don't understand why, Mike, he's going outside the top 200 picks right now in ADP. I mean, I know he's 38 and the knees are a huge concern, but why is he going so late? I don't understand this.
Why? That's why it's the age and people are looking at him and looking. 37 is usually that age where a player can fall off the cliff or can just rapidly go away. But, and I don't want to compare these two players because, you know, their one was, you know, much, much better. But as David Ortiz showed, you know, at DH, you know, if you're not on the field at all, you can kind of persist at a level for a while. So there's some drop-off concern with Martinez, but there's no reason not to think that he can't give you another year. You know, I think Alex mentioned this in the article. You know, even if the power drops off a little bit, I'm fine assuming you're going to get like 15 to 20 home runs, and the average, with the exception of 2015 when he was recovering from that injury, you go back and look, you know, all Victor Martinez does is, you know, spray balls into the gap in a park that's very good for that. So, yeah, there's some injury risk here, and I get that, but because of DH, you know, this is kind of the poor man's version of Hanley. If you get 130 games, 140 games out of V-Mart, that's a pretty safe bet.
It seems like you're only paying for the floor right now in terms of what you have to pay to get him on draft day. So I don't.
Unless he has a catastrophic injury, that's correct.
Right. It's not like coming off, I think it was 2014, where you had to pay like a fourth round ADP. I mean, you're not doing that this time. So, Brett, what's going on with Eric Hosmer? I don't know what to think anymore. I really don't.
Yeah, he's a really tough one because I think to an extent, you know, we're all still a little anchored to Hosmer the prospect, who was great and was supposed to develop this power, and he finally hit 25 home runs and knocked in 100 runs last year, and now it seems like he's, you know, finally feeling the full brunt of the disappointment from all of those people that believed in him back in, you know, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. But, you know, I think the tick up in strikeouts is worrisome. I think that if it, you know, if if it's a direct correlation of the power, which it might be, it might just be, you know, a change in approach for him, and he becomes sort of this, you know, this 260, 25 guy, then, you know, there's certainly value to that, but that becomes, I mean, that becomes way less interesting now without the batting average and without, you know, without the early career steals that he had. I mean, realistically, if you know, what is the big difference right now between Eric Hosmer and Mitch Moreland? Outside of the fact that you instinctively want to draft one and you instinctively want to stay away from the other. I mean, there's not that much of a difference, is there?
No, maybe counting stats, but even that, not really.
You know, it's funny you say that because the guy, and I've made this comparison with Hosmer in the past, and people have gotten mad at me for it. He's a better version in some ways of what James Loney was. And I'm not talking about James Loney with the Mets that everybody groaned at, but I'm talking about Loney at the beginning of his career with the Dodgers, where, you know, 15, 20 home runs, a decent average, and, you know, people are like, oh, he's going to be really good. He's going to be really good. And then, you know, you're right, Brett, when you looked at everything else, you're like, you know what? Like, he's okay for fantasy, but unless he's playing 150 games a year, there's some drop-off potential here. So I hear it, and of all the guys in this tier, he was the one I wanted to push down. But I was almost afraid to, because I felt like there'd be some backlash, you know, in those people who like Hosmer, like, oh, like, you know, he just hit 25 home runs, and he did this, and he's 27. And it's like, yeah, I get all that, but I do feel there's some floor here that hasn't been examined, particularly when you look at his ADP.
Yep, the final member of the three-star tier is Chris Davis, and he's going to be the subject of my avoid piece for the BP Fantasy staff picks this week. And just look at last year, he had 38 home runs. He finished 15th or 16th in terms of valuation at the position. I just think these power-only profiles, even when you factor in the counting stats, but with a, you know, a sub-230 batting average and zero speed, I mean, that's just not a valuable profile in a climate when 111 people are hitting 20 plus home runs. So I'm not a big Chris Davis fan. Does anybody have any thoughts on him, or is that the right way to look at it?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Davis, as much as it is the batting average, is it's the power. I mean, you're not buying Davis for 38 home runs. You're buying Davis for 45 to 50 home runs. And if he's not doing that, then you're probably disappointed with him in the end. I mean, his strikeout rate just keeps going up and up and up. I mean, everyone was concerned about his strikeout rate 3 years ago when he struck out 199 times in, you know, 584 at bats. That was the year he hit 53 home runs and hit 286. And, you know, he struck out 219 times last year on 566 at bats. So, you know, he's getting to the point in his career where there's really not much place for him to go upward. But, you know, that said, I don't, you know, the 45 plus homer power is still there. He just you just need it now in order for him to be worth his draft spot.
Yep. Well, you know what it is too. You can get a guy like Mark Trumbo, and even more so, you know, assuming they sign somewhere, someone like Chris Carter, and you'll get them cheaper, and you can get most of that production with the bad average. So unless there's some fundamental belief that Davis is going to hit 250 or 260, which I don't have, it's kind of odd to me that he's being taken. You know, I'm looking at the ADP right now. You know, he's being taken much higher.
Sixth round right now.
Yeah, 77th overall. He's being taken much higher than some other guys where it's like, okay, so you might lose like 15, 20 home runs, but everything else is going to be the same, and you're not going to have that batting average drag. So I get it to a degree. I get why you want that power, and you know, you might even get 50 home runs, but otherwise, I just don't see it.
So the two-star tier, there are 10 names in there. I'll start with you, Brett. Give me someone that you like in 2017 out of this group of 10. Brett, you there? Hello?
Oh, I was on mute.
Yeah, there we go. Yep.
I was trying to be cognizant of my typing for the listeners, and I was too cognizant, and I just screwed them over. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to repeat that. So Pujols is sort of settling into this perpetually undervalued in drafts position, which is really nice when you're just looking to fill some power at first base later on. I mean, he's clearly a shell of the hitter that he was, but you know, a lot of that has come in his diminished walk rate, and you know, he doesn't really score very many runs anymore, but you know, he is still an extremely strong contributor in home runs and RBI. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And the batting average is, you know, he's not a 230, 240 hitter. I think he's a pretty safe 260, 270 hitter, and he might even have a little bit of upside on top of that, because you know, his strikeout rate is ticking up, but it's not ticking up substantially. So you know, I think there's a floor to that. And you know, I think he's a safe option. I think he's a good option. He's not sexy though.
I think this was the point I made last year when we were doing the target pieces for this. It's like, hey, he's fine. Like you can get him pretty late too. It's like outside the top 100 picks. So Mike, who's a guy you like in the 2-star tier?
Well, there's a few guys I like here, but maybe I'm just getting sucked into him because I live here, but I really like Tommy Joseph. The power, he was profiled at the beginning of the year as a lefty masher who had to platoon with Ryan Howard, you know, and you can make your Ryan Howard jokes one last time, but he was adequate and maybe a little better than that against right-handers. And you know, in fact, 14 of his 21 home runs came against right-handers. There's a real shot here at a 30 home run season, and where I see Tommy Joseph going, he's not going to be drafted that way. And even the average will not kill you. That's the other thing about this tier with the, you know, looking at what these guys did with a couple of exceptions, you're really looking at, you know, some guys who could hurt you in the category without that power upside, with the exception of Carter. And I just like Joseph's all around game. And he's definitely gotten past the point where, you know, he was just an afterthought in the Hunter Pence trade. He could be a reliable corner in mixed leagues or deeper mixed leagues. And, you know, in only leagues, you're definitely going to want a part of him.
We've talked a lot about Eric Thames on, I think I'm saying that right. If I'm not, I don't remember the right way. We talked a lot about him on
you
Tino.
Are.
Okay, good. We talked about him on Tino, so the last Tino episode. So if you're interested in Eric Thames, which everyone seems to be, please go listen to that. We've covered that ground pretty extensively. But Brett, I want to ask you real quickly about Brandon Belt, because we got a question from Tim Bennett on Twitter at Bumblebee Tuna. He wants to know if 25 home runs is in the cards for Brandon Belt. I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. Is there anyone that you guys see that's an obvious stay away in this 2-star tier that you wouldn't be interested at all in?
You could not pay me to draft Justin Bour. You could not pay me.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, he was my pick, so we obviously disagree on that. But
whoa. Yep.
Yeah. But for me, the stay away guy here is Adrian Gonzalez, and I did mention the article. His splits have become really heavy. He's a big drag and against lefties. And at this point, even in this tier, you're kind of paying for the reputation. I'd rather have the stats.
All right, it's time to play everyone's favorite game, the 1-star value pick. And Brett, since you went first last week, Mike, you have the option to go first this week. So who are you taking?
Oh, God. Well, the thing is, I write these articles, so I should probably take the guy I wrote about. And last week I avoided that, and you laughed at me about Austin Hedges.
I did.
So I don't want that to happen again. So I'm going to take Steve Pierce. Steve Pierce is a guy who, you know, the Blue Jays signed a multi-year deal. Now, they did bring Jose Bautista in, so it changes the composition of that team a little bit. But I really have a hard time thinking that either Justin Smoak at first or Melvin Upton or Ezekiel Carrera in the outfield are going to keep Pierce from playing. And the thing about Steve Pearce is he's hit. He's a poor man's Joseph insofar as he's hit right-handers, so he's not just a lefty masher. And it's not hard to see Pearce getting 450, 500 plate appearances and hitting 20-plus home runs, which in this tier is pretty big. Now, if one of the free agents in this tier signs, that could change things considerably. But, you know, right now I'm assuming they either won't or they could wind up in a platoon.
I agree with you, Mike. I love Steve Pearce in Toronto, especially if you can platoon him with daily lineups. He's a great pick to sort of stream on your roster. Brett, who are you going with?
I want to believe in him enough that he could possibly stay healthy to take Ryan Zimmerman, because I think that I'm not taking him, but he is, you know, he is sort of the one of the he makes a lot of hard contact. Unfortunately, things make a lot of hard contact with him, and he ends up not playing. But one of these years, he's also not as old as you think. One of these years, he's going to have another top 10 season at. Not another, because his last top 10 season was at a different position. But one of these years, I do think he's going to be a top 10 first baseman. I just don't know when it's going to be. But for the purposes of this exercise, I'm gonna take Mike Napoli. I think, you know, the power and you know, the return to Texas. I think it's there's a lot of stuff to like here, and. You know, I think he's going to be in a very good position to hit home runs and put up a lot of runs better than.
That feels like cheating. I don't know how Napoli's in the one star tier. Like, it just feels to me like he was a two star guy. So that's a great pick. I'm gonna go with Dan Vogelbach. I'm gonna go off the board here. As much as I like AJ Reed, I just think it's gonna be harder for him to find a spot. Vogelbach essentially is gonna be able to platoon on day one. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, the gulf between AAA and major leagues being pretty wide, but Vogelbach is essentially the best hitter in AAA last year. Had a .334 true average, which was second out of 129 hitters with 400 plus PAs. He's going to platoon against righties. In the minors against the righties, he hit .339, .451, .563 with 44 walks and only 46 strikeouts and 250 at-bats last year. So I like Dan Vogelbach. I think there's a ton of risk there, but he's going to cost you nothing. And if you're in a really deep mixed league and you can platoon him with a guy like Steve Pearce or Danny Valencia, it can work for you in a daily sort of format. Brett, I know you like Vogelbach. Am I crazy to like Vogelbach this year?
I don't think you're crazy. I think I don't think he has a ton of upside this year, given that I think his playing time is going to be a little diminished, and given that, you know, he'll be adjusting to the majors. But, you know, Seattle is a pretty nice above average park for left-handed power now. So it's there is opportunity there for him to hit 20 home runs. I'm a big believer long term. I'm just not going to invest a ton in redraft leagues this year.
Just a few quick hit prospect questions. Mike, Josh Bell in Pittsburgh. What are you expecting from him this year? What's maybe a realistic expectation for Josh Bell?
10 to 15 home runs with a solid batting average. I have to say, I'm guys like Bell who have that top heavy swing always kind of scare me. Like, anecdotally, they tend to get exposed, particularly their first full season. I believe in the hit tool, but I'm not sure if the power is ever really going to get there.
Brett, at this time a year ago, AJ Reed looked like he was going to be a potential superstar. He led the minor leagues in home runs, slugging percentage, and then he hit .164 and struck out 34% of the time in the majors. What do you expect from AJ Reed? Because I think there's still a ton of talent here, and everybody seems to have completely forgotten about him.
Yeah, I don't think you should expect a ton this year. I think there will be a time where he gets another opportunity, but I don't think it's going to be early this year. I think it. I think you're talking about someone who will get a chance, and just really just in case of injury. But Reed is going to Reed's going to have to prove it at the major league level at this point before before people get too, you know, before people get too excited about him in fantasy again.
Last question. We get tons of questions about Cody Bellinger, and I just wanted to get your impressions of him, Brett. People ask us all the time about him.
He's a good prospect. Do people think he's really going to play much this year?
No, I just think long term people like him. I don't know. I'm just giving the people what they want. That's all.
Sure. He's likable long term. He's like, you know, he's like Josh Bell, but with more power and less batting average. So not really like Josh Bell. He's fine. I don't think he has the upside to be a 4 or 5 star first baseman, but I think he's a guy who could settle in as a 3 star for, you know, for a good chunk of time, probably starting in 2018 or so. How long is Adrian Gonzalez under contract for?
I don't know, but it feels like forever. I mean, we got two questions about Bellinger, and both of them wanted to know if he was going to have any impact this year. So I'm going to say no, probably.
No.
Okay.
No. Adrian Gonzalez is a free agent after 2018. So
yeah, I thought he had 2 years.
Bellinger's time is coming.
Finally.
No, like I said about Gonzalez, I could see him in a situation by the end of next year where if he's not producing, they replace him. So yeah, you're looking at a year and a half.
All right.
I mean, they turned Andre Ethier into a really expensive bench player. So why not?
Sure. Anything's possible. Rowdy Tellez, on a scale of 1 to 10, how awesome is he? Because I love him. He's great.
I know you love him.
Ah, so good. I traded for him from you in TDGX.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah. Francisco what was Galeriano?
That was in the Liriano trade?
That was such a bad trade in retrospect all around. Not a great one.
Yeah. I don't know. I still have to. We'll get to Liriano in starting pitching week, but
that's true.
I'm not off Liriano,
but I'm also not off Tellez either. So we're both
a 10 on the name, a 4 on the player.
Wow. Okay. Ouch. That was rough. I like Rowdy Tellez, so don't let anyone tell you otherwise, Rowdy. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna come back and wrap up the show next here on FlagSpy Forever. Thank you for listening to episode 115 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. Our positional preview series is going on at the moment. This week is first base, next up second base, and so on and so forth. We have up to 20 articles per week on the topic, along with target and avoid pieces, all kinds of stuff, including Mike's tiered rankings and my state of the position pieces. You should check that out. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service where you can send Craig Goldstein questions about prospects at 3 a.m. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I am at George Bissell. That's with 2 S's and 2 L's. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. We haven't had any ratings or reviews in a while. So if you love the show, please do that. Every rating or review helps us out tremendously. And you can tell us about your feelings, and we'll tell you about ours as a result. So for Brett Sayer, Mike Gianella, it's George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Till our next show. So long, everybody. Animal crackers.
Still have some left.
Are they the ones that are the frosted ones?
No, I'm not four.
Oh, those are good. I won't knock those. If you don't knock it unless you try it.
I've tried them.
They're good.
They're frosted. Of course they're good.
Yeah, they're like the Rowdy Tellez of animal cracker cookies. They're awesome.